Welcome to World Soccer Weekly, bringing the global game to the U.S. For the most informative free podcast, check out World Soccer Weekly. Now here's your host, John Ballinger and Kali Skelton.
Alright, and welcome to this week's edition of World Soccer Weekly. I am your host, John Ballinger, alongside Kali Skelton, and it was somewhat of a quiet weekend for the footballing world as we had an international break with the Euro Championship qualifiers being the brunt of the games most people would be interested in this week. And we had some interesting ones last Friday to start off with that we will get to in a minute. We've got an email, or first off, let me say, I guess this show will be a little bit shortened since we didn't have those games discussed this past weekend, but we'll take a look at, the first fixtures in the Euro Championships, qualifying rather, and we'll take a look at the MLS as usual. So, let's get off to, well, we'll start with an email we got last week from Dennis Fairchild from San Diego, California. I'll read what Dennis had to say. I wanted to say I enjoy your podcast. I'm not always able to get up for the early games on the weekends because of my job, and I appreciate the recaps of the Premier League and the MLS. I wouldn't mind seeing more discussion on the European side. You always have discussions about America. Also, both of you seem to be interviewing each other rather than having a conversation. And, Kali, you might want to slow down while you're speaking. Sorry if I seem to be a little bit overcritical, but because I do enjoy your show. I just want to offer some advice since you both seem to have a lot of knowledge in your respective areas. So thank you very much for that. And here's Dennis's question we'll read and answer as best as possible. How do you all feel about players earning citizenships in places that aren't their own country? You mentioned Rossi being Giuseppe Rossi in the last one, and there's some animosity. What about Adu? I think the game is such a business now that players should be able, as long as they qualify, to play wherever they want. Thanks for the email. Hope to hear it on the next show. All right, and first of all, thanks for the email, Dennis. But, and I guess we'll start right where you ended there. Yeah, as long as they can qualify, they're going to play where they want, and that's why it's possible. And so, ultimately, I guess the way you have to look at it is you win some and you lose some with these type of players. But the Rossi case, of course, I mean, of course we're going to have a little bit of animosity about it. Of course, the famous quote, yeah, if you want to.
He feels like he is an American when he's off the field, and when he's on the field, he's an Italian.
Right. And so, of course, we're going to have some animosity just based on that alone. I mean, Giuseppe Rossi, he's a guy, he was born in Teaneck, New Jersey, to an Italian immigrant. It's completely understandable why his dream would be to play for the Italian national team since he can. However, at the same time, you know, most players you see make those moves, rarely, I guess, are they step up. So a lot of the moves you see are because they can't play for, you know, the country they were born in, and so they kind of step down. So, you know, for him to, I guess it stings a little bit because, you know, he's taken a big chance with the Italian national team. And so far, you know, it's kind of tough to say where he is. Obviously, he's still a young player, but he was left off the Italian national team this summer for the World Cup. And, of course, if he had suited up for the USA, you know, there's no doubt he probably would have been the first name on our sheet.
And I think that's a big problem. That's why we almost take more animosity to Giuseppe Rossi than we do some of the other players that decided that does not play for the United States, is because that's a position that we have long tried to fill, that
right.
Pure striker, out-and-out striker.
There's no indication that any of our young strikers are going to be near as good as Giuseppe Rossi is right now. So, of course, it stings. I mean, who knows where we would have gone if we had the guy. I think we get past Ghana and maybe have a very great game against Uruguay. But so who knows? And that's why it hurts. And we saw firsthand last summer, you know, how good he is against us. He scored 2 goals in the Confederation Cup against us, one of which, that first one, I mean, which of our strikers could have scored that goal? None of them. And none of them would have even thought about trying to shoot from, you know, 25, 30 yards out. So, he's a special player. That's why that one hurts. You know, on to Adu. I mean, what's
Adu's not the only one. I think Anueyu would qualify for Nigeria. I mean,
yeah,
we have so many players that
same with Maurice. Maurice Adu could qualify for Nigeria.
And
as well.
Urim, most of them we almost had until he played for Armenia this last Friday. And yeah, I mean, especially with the United States, we always have that immigrant population that is always going to have this issue. And when you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, and they hurt when they're Aussie, but I mean, it's what you have to deal with.
Yeah, and I mean, his main question, I guess, is what about Adu? And, I mean, it was, I guess more than anything else, the Freddie Adu move was, you know, just a financially it made sense for him. It from a purely footballing perspective, it's not like, you know, Freddie Adu dreamed of playing for the vaunted U.S. national team, not to slight our own national team, but it's really more financially motivated than anything else when he moved over as a young kid. And whereas Rossi, of course, you know, I guess my point is there's not a whole lot of difference between the Ghana or Ghanaian national team and the U.S. national team. Well, aside from the fact they've knocked us out of the last two World Cups, I guess.
Besides, they might be better than us.
Right, exactly. And so I don't think the Ghanaians are too upset over Freddie Adu.
No. Neither are we at this point.
Right. So,
yeah, I think
a fair question.
I think he makes a good point about it just being almost the nature of the business now. Cacao plays for Germany after moving over at the age of 19. And I mean, there's business incentives, and it's almost like the natural progression of the game. As much as we still want to believe these are like our national teams, that bring our jingoist ideas, it's a business, and they're going to play where they can play and where they can make money.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, question or a problem that's only going to get more and more complicated as you see guys like last week, Mikel Arteta, I guess, officially declined or said he wouldn't, play for the national team.
He wasn't registered for England when he was like in the U15, U16 levels?
I think it was something like that.
So that's purely an England thing, because, I mean, like I just said, Cacao moved over at age 18. Surely he was not.
Right, just the fact that you've got a guy like Mikel Arteta being thrown around for, you know, being in England long enough to, on the surface, seemingly qualify. But, yeah, I think we're just going to see more and more of that with players who can't crack their own national sides. And with Giuseppe Rossi, you know, I mean, who knows if he ever becomes a, you know, regular in the Italian national side. I mean, you see great strikers left off of that team every World Cup, every Euros. So, you know, good luck to him. But, yeah, obviously we're going to have some animosity because we really could use him. Yeah. But thanks for the question, and let's get on with the show. Where to start? I guess we'll start with the Euros.
Yeah, probably a good place.
No Premier League is always disappointing in the international breaks from that perspective.
Yeah, these international breaks are always like clockwork, and where they always arrive as soon as Liverpool or they might be on a minor skid, and then they'll get a decent result, not a great performance, but something to get the fans a little bit optimistic about next week, and then the international break comes, and Torres, who seems to always be coming back to fitness right when those games start. He'll get called up to Spain. He'll probably play pretty well, but come back a little tighter, a little unfit, and then we always have that tough away match, it seems. Like, I think it's Birmingham this week on a Sunday. I'm already bracing myself for the impending 0-0 1-1 draw to Birmingham because of this stupid international break.
And for those who, I guess, don't, or kind of getting into the game, I mean, I think it's fair, or would you agree that the Euros are probably, in terms of quality, the best tournament that you're going to see, just because of the World Cup, the plays, there's just not that familiarity for teams to, you know, really attack each other. And
I think so. I think from top to bottom, the teams are probably a little bit more balanced. Overall, you're not getting groups with North Korea and Brazil like you get in the World Cup, which I think are really interesting matchups. But on a quality standpoint, I think the Euros is probably a more balanced, even tournament, and when compared to like the World Cup.
Yeah, and there are some very interesting groups. If you don't know how it works, there are, I believe, 9 groups, 2 teams, Poland and Ukraine, the joint host for Euro 2012, have already qualified.
And drew which was kind of ironic. They played, well, I guess, on Friday, and they drew 1-1. So.
Right. So there are nine groups. The first place teams advance, and then I guess the eight. I think it's what the eight best second place teams face off in the playoffs, and so you've got four more that qualify from that point. And
yeah, the best second place team with the most points automatically qualifies, and yeah, the other eight from the nine groups will have to go in a two-legged playoff, and the winners of those go to the Euros. So 16 teams in total.
There are some really tight groups.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see Group A in action. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah, really, from a Turkish and Belgian perspective, it's going to be, and then Austria as well. You know, won't be a pushover.
Well, I mean, of the groups, I think that Group A is, because I mean, Turkey, as everybody remembers, the last Euros stole the show with all their behind performances, and Belgium. Are they the most interesting team in this group? I mean, or even tournament, I would say, with Romelu Lukaku up front, a Belgian 17-year-old, Congolese descent, real big, real strong, has plenty of speed, and he's a little bit lacking on the technical side, and he's still so young at 17, but you expect huge things out of him. He's already been linked and turning down type moves to Chelsea, and I think he's labeled as next Didier Drogba, but the sky's the limit with him, and it's not only him. You have Eden Hazard, who's probably one of the best players in the French league. Behind him, you have Steven Defour, who people are shocked he's still playing at Standard Liège, a great midfielder, and he links up well with Fellaini, who's also doing pretty dang well at Everton.
Yeah, and even a pretty good back line. And, I mean, with Vermaelen, Kompany, Gregory Van der Wiel, so...
Well, Well is Van der Wiel's Dutch, but yeah, they have Van Boyden, who's their captain, I believe. I mean, we all know how good he is after that Bayern Munich Champions League run. Yeah, if you can be that good of a defense with Michaelis next to you in that back line, then that's saying something. But my only worry, I guess, if Van Boyden goes down, that's a lot of experience gone, but also his ability in the air. I'm not sure that the Belgian national team has really a replacement for him. I can't say I'm an expert about their pool, but yeah, I don't see Kompany, who's big, just doesn't seem like he's that either aggressive or he's just not that good in the air, flat out. And Vermaelen, obviously, a good central defender, good with positioning, but can be beat in the air. And their goalkeepers are young. This is a team that I'm really interested in seeing in that 2014 World Cup cycle.
Yeah, it will, and you know, even sooner. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they can get it together with this, you know, a younger group for the most part, the core that we're talking about.
Are all under age 24.
Right. So it's going to be most interesting to see how they do in qualifying. They lost, I guess, Friday.
I don't think they look too bad. I think that's just that one colossal mistake by Van Boyden. Got his pocket picked. And
right.
They lost the game off that one. But that's a tough start facing Germany. As much as you like them at home, it's a tough start.
Yeah, so to round out that group, we've got Belgium, Turkey, along with Germany, of course, and Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan. So yeah, and I guess Austria are another wild card. I mean, I think both of us fancy Turkey or Belgium to finish second.
I think these ties the fate of Turkey and Belgium will be decided with the matches against themselves. I think that one in Turkey is going to be a cracker, if I could use an Anglo phrase.
Right. Gus Hiddink still proving the 3-5-2 is not quite dead yet. But Group B.
You see that set piece goal? Wow, that was incredible. If you guys can check out the highlights for that Turkey game on Friday. Incredible goal.
Yep, Turkey Kazakhstan, that was a great goal. On to Group B. You know, three pretty good sides with Russia, Ireland, and Slovakia. Macedonia, Armenia, and Andorra round out the group. But it'll be interesting to see who comes out of that group on top. I think all three of those teams aforementioned could easily win the group.
Yeah, Ireland is almost the wild card. You don't know how they're going to perform on a week-to-week basis.
Right.
But, you got to think they got to fancy their chances getting out of this group.
Yeah, big 3 points at Armenia. Very, very easily could have lost, but nonetheless, they'll take it. And I guess Slovakia and Russia also took 3 points. And what the Slovakia-Russia game they played this morning, and Slovakia won, so they're off. Trying to ruin the Russians' chances of glory again. I believe, Slovakia knocked Russia out of the World Cup playoffs, right?
I thought that was Slovenia.
Was it Slovenia?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Who did Slovakia? They beat, I know, maybe they qualified straight through, I guess.
Yeah, they did. It was that same group with Slovenia and Czech Republic, if I remember right.
Well, on to Group C, we've got Serbia, Italy, Northern Ireland, Slovenia, and the Faroe Islands. So, once again, I mean,
seems like they put all the smallest countries together in this one group.
Yeah, it's some very small ones in there. Italy are obviously going to be favored to go through, but Serbia and Slovenia, who we just became acquainted with this summer, they'll be in it. And, Northern Ireland, I mean, they have, from a talent perspective, I mean, on paper, they don't really look any worse than the Slovenian side that we saw at the World Cup, but just a matter of putting it together. I mean, it's been a long time since they played in a major tournament.
Yeah, but any injuries, though, and they'll probably be in a crisis.
Yeah, that's true. Not a whole lot of depth, but so that'll be an interesting one to see who can go through with Italy. I think Serbia got to be slight favorites over Slovenia and Northern Ireland to finish second.
Yeah, probably, and I think Italy coming back from Estonia was probably the watershed moment maybe for them to forget that World Cup and probably go on win this group comfortably.
Right. Group D, we have Bosnia-Herzegovina, Belarus, Albania, Romania, France, and Luxembourg. Laurent Blanc, looked like a win to start off the Euro qualifying could have gone a long way to quell the fans' anger, so to speak, but couldn't get it done at home to Belarus. What do you make of that?
Oh, geez, poor France, I guess. I don't know. It seemed like they did everything right in the build-up to this match. They were going to clean out the closet of all the bad seeds, banning all the bad apples, and they brought Zinedine Zidane into their training sessions and were a little bit more nationalistic vibe with singing the national anthem and the pride of France returning, and it was just a poor showing. And I know probably losing Simon Nasri was probably a blow to him, because I mean he's probably one of the more gifted sides to this France team, which I wouldn't say it'd be harsh to call them a B team, because there's a lot of gifted players and you expect them.
Yeah, and I mean it might as well be a B side.
Yeah. I mean, but that does not excuse the performance and how poorly they looked. And that goal they gave up was just terrible to defend. They had about five or six chances to clear the ball, and it was just it was almost as catastrophic defending as it was a World Cup form.
Yeah, no change there from the World Cup form, it didn't seem, with Laurent Blanc. Bosnia-Herzegovina, be interesting to see if they can qualify, because they've got some good young players. Of course, Aiden Zeko, everyone knows about, already off to a flying start in the Bundesliga this year. And, I mean, they look like they have a squad. France doesn't get it together soon, they could end up winning this group.
And they got to go to a couple of real tough places. I think Bosnia is going to be a tough trip, and Romania is always a tough trip, which is for everybody.
Right.
There's quite a few banana skins left for France.
Yep. All right, moving on to Group E. The Dutch, fresh off their finals appearance in the World Cup, along with Sweden, Hungary, Moldova, Finland, and San Marino.
Everybody's favorite team.
Everyone's favorite team in Europe.
I mean, credit to them, they only lost 5-0 against the Dutch, so a good start for them. In all honesty, that's probably a pretty good start for them.
Yeah. And then, of course, I guess Sweden and Hungary, it'll be interesting to see. Sweden will be slight favorites, I guess, to finish second in this group, but, Hungary are not a side to be discounted. And Moldova, they took 3 points, I guess. Was that against was it Finland?
Yep.
Yeah. So rare you see them get 3 points on the board at any point during World Cup qualifying or Euro qualifying. On to Group F, Croatia, Israel, Greece, Georgia, Malta, and Latvia. Those top three.
Probably the weakest group, I would say, all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, you've got three really weak squads, and then, rather Israel can kind of stake their claim.
I do believe Latvia was in the last Euros, if I recall correctly. I think they made it last in 2000. Well, not last. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 2000.
2004.
Yeah, 2004, I think they were in the Euros, not 2008.
Right. So Croatia, they'll be strong favorites to win their group, as they did in 2008 qualifying. And, of course, I'll be disappointed not to have been at the World Cup this summer with their players. But Israel and Greece, should be fun to see who goes through second place there. All right, Group G. England trying to rebound, kept Fabio Capello to the surprise of some, I would say, in a group with compatriots Wales, Bulgaria, Switzerland, and Montenegro.
Looks pretty comfortable on paper for them.
Yeah, it does. I mean, top to bottom. I guess the worst teams in this group are a lot better than the worst teams in most of these groups, but at the same time...
But none look like they are really going to challenge England at all.
Right, and I mean, well, Friday, England looked like the team in World Cup qualifying as opposed to the team we saw this summer in the real deal, so I guess there's no real reason to think that Fabio Capello won't be able to handle qualifying for this tournament. And... What they got off to a 4-0 win against Bulgaria.
Jermaine Defoe hat trick,
which actually kind of an interesting stat. That hat trick means that more Spurs have scored for England than any other club at like 188 goals, I believe.
Wow.
And I think
past
Manchester United, who I believe had like 187. And Liverpool were a distant third at like 136.
Yeah, we're all Scottish. We're not England. We're Scouts. So.
Right.
And I think I heard something along the lines of Jermaine Defoe, I'm sure you know this, has probably, a better goal per minute ratio for England than Wayne Rooney.
Probably so. I mean, I didn't hear that stat specifically, but that doesn't surprise me at all. What to make of that? I'm not sure, but I mean
they're different
something.
Situations with their rod in, of course, but it's still something fun to poke the English with, I think.
Yeah, I mean, who do you like to finish second in this group? I mean, Switzerland have to be slight favorites.
I don't think Switzerland. I know Wales looked pretty awful against Montenegro, but
yeah, I mean, John Toshak's probably out the door soon, and Bulgaria. Once again, their squad. They have players, but I guess their back line's just not very good.
I guess we can go ahead and pencil in England as Euro 2012 winners and World Cup winners after their first match.
So Group H: Norway, Cyprus, Portugal, Denmark, Iceland. I guess the most exciting game from last weekend, the Cyprus-Portugal game, a 4-4 thriller.
Without a coach, without Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And the problems persist.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see there. I mean, Portugal, Denmark, and Norway, and you'd have to fancy Portugal, but Denmark and Norway, they're both capable.
This is a good, solid group. I'm excited for this Denmark-Norway game. I think that'll be a good one.
Yeah, and if Iceland are, the fourth... or the second-to-worst team in your group, you're not going to have too many pushovers.
And your worst group scored 4 goals away from home to Portugal.
Right.
Should be a good one.
All right, in the final group, the current World Cup and the Euro champions, Spain, alongside Czech Republic, Scotland, Lithuania, and Liechtenstein. We know who should finish first, but... And I guess if Czech Republic
get it together,
we saw I guess we saw towards the end of World Cup qualifying there, kind of a changing of the guard, new generation of Czech players coming through, and you know, surely I think it'd be a big shock if they didn't finish second. But yeah. You know, Scotland are going to be competitive.
They just need to find a striker. That seems to be the one thing they're missing is that striker to put all their chances in the back of the net. I thought they created a fair amount of chances, but they almost have USA syndrome where they just can't find the guy to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, I think they're finally going to start Chris Boyd.
I mean, that's been a long time
coming. Right, for the first time in a while. So, be interesting to see. But yeah, I mean, Scotland, who nearly qualified in the Euro 2008 in a group with Italy and France, who were coming off of World Cup finals, respectively. But and really kind of got screwed. So it'll be interesting to see how the Scots rebound for 2012. Yeah. So
it should be interesting. I know we're both kind of club guys in the European game. We definitely follow the clubs more than we do like any of the international teams. Certainly not anywhere close to how we follow the U.S. national team. But it seems like this tournament is going to have or at least the qualification process is going to have a lot of interesting storylines and matchups, especially Group A and H, I think, are at least my groups to watch as a neutral, and should be fun to watch.
Yeah. So as qualifying goes along, we'll keep you apprised of those results and what transpires. Okay, so let's go ahead and take a look at this weekend's Premier League fixtures. I'm sure everybody was jonesing for some EPL action this past weekend, but never fear, back this weekend.
Our predictions are here.
Yep, so let's take a look at the first one, Everton-Manchester United at Goodison. You know, can Everton finally get it going? I mean, they played decent, or at least they played, you know, played pretty well, I thought, against Aston Villa.
Probably their best performance so far of the year, despite
right.
that one win I think they have.
And once again, though, where the goal is going to come from if they don't get them from Tim Cahill or somewhere else in the midfield. What do you think?
Yeah, that's always a tough matchup that you don't want to see as Manchester United away at early kickoff right after international break. So I think if there's any time they're primed to drop points, it might be here. And I'll go with Everton 1-1.
Yeah, I think Everton took 3 points from Manchester United at home last year.
Which is a rarity.
Right.
They usually do struggle against United.
But, yeah, I'll say 2-1 Manchester United. I just, once again, Louis Saha aside, I mean, if you're dependent on Jermaine Beckford, and we talked about it, to be your main source of goals up front this year, I mean, you're in trouble. So, yeah. All right, moving on. Arsenal-Bolton at the Emirates.
Used to be a match I almost might fancy Bolton in under Sam Allardyce, but with his new way of playing, I just feel Arsenal are going to be pretty comfortable in this match.
Yeah, they should. I mean, I'd say to the tune of like 3-1 sounds about right.
Yeah,
to me.
I'll go 2-0.
All right, on to Fulham Wolves. Wolves, one of the surprise. Well, you know, not. I guess they've drawn twice and won once. So you know, hadn't lost yet. Mick McCarthy undefeated so far. So. One of the pleasant surprises, I guess, so far the Premier League.
Yeah, but the problem is those draws will come back and haunt you. If that's all you're picking up. You got to start getting wins at some point. I think Hull ran into that trouble a couple years ago when they started off winning. And they weren't losing, but they were drawing a lot of matches, and they got sucked right back into that relegation race.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, though, I think Wolves, you know, have a little bit more quality to try to get some, you know, 3 points. As opposed to that whole side, but I mean, point well taken. But I'm sure if you offered Mick McCarthy 5 points in the first three games, he'd jump.
Yeah,
over.
I'm just saying you can't go on a continued long run of just getting this 1 point.
Yeah. So Fulham at home, I'm gonna say 2-0 Fulham.
I'm gonna go 0-0.
All right, Manchester City, Blackburn Rovers at Manchester City. So. What do you think happens at Eastlands?
I think City's probably going to win this one. Blackburn will make it tough, but I think City have the aerial threat that, or the aerial defense that they'll be okay. And I think City will win 1-0.
Yeah, I mean, they should be able to deal with Blackburn's attack, I would think. So I'll say 2-1 Manchester City. Newcastle at home to Blackpool. Newcastle off to a pretty decent start. I'll say 3-0 Newcastle. Just not much confidence for me from Blackpool going forward.
Yeah, I'll go 2-0. I don't think Luke Farnik is going to be able to pull up another goal like that for a while.
Right. All right, on to West Brom and Spurs at the Hawthorns. Rafael van der Vaart expected to make his Spurs debut. Be interesting to see how we rebound from that poor result a couple weeks ago at Wigan. So I'm going to go with 2-1 Spurs.
Yeah, I think Spurs will win this game. I guess Jermaine Defoe is going to be coming off that high of scoring with England. I don't think West Brom's really going to be able to shut down his quick turn. Their defenders are pretty tall and strong, but they kind of struggle when you're quick and you're low,
yeah,
when you have a low center of gravity. And I think Spurs will probably win this 1-2-0.
All right, West Ham and Chelsea at Upton Park.
Yeah, this is always an interesting match, I think, despite how West Ham's been struggling. They always put up a tough fight in these London derbies.
Yeah, always. But, you know, just the way each team respectively playing right now, hard to see West Ham coming away with anything. We'll go with 2-0 Chelsea.
Yeah, I still think Chelsea will probably run out. I think they might get a late winner, probably 1-0.
All right, on to Wigan-Sunderland. After a few atrocious games, Wigan got their first 3 points of the season.
And they're back in front of their beloved home crowd.
Yeah, so Steve Bruce returns to the DWB, or DW, rather.
Used to be the JJB.
Right. So, what do you think? Sunderland-Wigan?
I actually kind of fancy Wigan in this match. They got off a real bad start, and they looked decent enough in their last match, of course. They were probably second best for most of the match against Spurs, but I think they're going to put it together. I think Sunderland's going to probably go back to a 4-4-2 now that with their record signing. And I think Wigan might fancy that at home.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And then Sunderland really didn't look that impressive against City, even though they got the 3 points. But
well, I think they did what they meant to do. I don't think it was ever going to be pretty.
Right. I mean, yeah, they don't have the quality to beat Manchester City in a pretty manner. Of course not. But
yeah, probably not. But I don't think you can hold that against them. I thought they had a game plan they stuck with, and credit to them for doing that.
But, all right, well, Sunderland at Wigan.
I'll go 1-0 Wigan.
All right, yeah, I'm going to say 2-1 Sunderland. I don't have too much confidence in Wigan even after that result. But, all right, Sunday, Birmingham-Liverpool, St. Andrews.
It's been a banana skin before. It might be again. I think Liverpool, with Torres starting to ride high, might sneak out a 2-1 win, but I don't think it's going to be anything pretty.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And, of course, Birmingham had some big transfer day moves. Liverpool, it's just going to be interesting to see how, as the season progresses, that squad's so comparatively thin to the other teams that are, you know, trying to get in the top four, but still early. I don't know. I can't see Liverpool getting 3 points. I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. All right, Monday, Stoke City, Aston Villa. Hard to see anything, or this one being anything more than a bore fest. But
yeah, I mean, with Gerard Houllier probably stepping in, it's basically almost a tactical-wise, a like-for-like for what Aston Villa have been doing for the last year and a half under Martin O'Neill with the three-prong attack, but it's completely based on the counter.
Right.
And against Stoke, that's going to be pretty much banging your head against the wall for both teams. I can see this game.
Got draw written all over.
Yeah, I can see this probably being a 0-0.
All right, yeah, I'll say 1-1.
Man, unless something special happens, I really don't see any team breaking through.
All right, so we'll see what happens this weekend, and we'll look forward to breaking those down next week. Let's move on to the MLS. start to get closer and closer to the playoffs. There's some big games this weekend. And I guess we'll start with...
None bigger than Real Salt Lake Red
Salt
Bulls.
Salt Lake and Red Bulls. Real Salt Lake just continue to win at home. And I don't think they were that convincing, though. What do you think?
I thought they were actually pretty convincing. I think you also have to take... This is the problem with the MLS in our current schedule is this is we are only most teams are what 7-8 games away from the end of the season, and these are critical moments, and we're playing on an international break, so such a new but valuable piece of that midfield with Rafa Marquez, who would be completely essential against a team like Real Salt Lake when they're playing at home, because you need someone to break up and control possession back to try to counter that Real Salt Lake style, and he's missing. And now you're left on an island with Stamler and Gianni, who's improved, but I don't think he's quite near the quality to command a midfield away from home at a place where nobody's won except Real Salt Lake since 2009.
Right.
And I think Real Salt Lake were pretty much in control for the most of the match. They controlled the ball well. That early goal probably helped set the tone, and it was a complete mismatch in the midfield.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately that's why they got 3 points. I mean, I guess when I say it wasn't that convincing, I didn't come away from the game thinking that, you know, this team's, you know, miles better than Red Bulls, and it would be interesting to see
that's just the case
coming away in the playoffs. But I mean,
that's the case with almost any MLS team is you're not going to have a complete thorough beating unless some team is just. Unless you're playing DC or Chivas, these teams are going to be on pretty even footing.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, no question, big 3 points. But
and you can't question Salt Lake's ability at
home.
I
guess my point is you know they didn't prove to me that you know they're easily the best team in the MLS right now, which I think a lot of people would say based on their form.
But this was a hot New York Red Bulls team that they made look pretty ordinary, and I think there's something to say for that. And this, you have to also keep in mind that this is the MLS where it's built not to have teams clearly and thoroughly above another team. I guess the DPs will always add an extra edge, but for the most part, the base teams are always going to be in the same ballpark as another team. So I don't think you can really expect Real Salt Lake to have a championship winning game in the sense of like a 3-0 against another supposed title contender. But I think this home run that they've been on since, I guess, May 2009, where they've been being at home, is significant evidence that they're a pretty good team, or at least a cut above a lot of teams, and maybe the gap between them and some of the other teams isn't massive, but it's certainly there.
Yeah, and once again, I mean, that goes back to pretty much everyone that goes to the Rio Tinto looks somewhat ordinary, but you know, once it gets into the playoffs, we'll see what happens in those home and aways. All right, on to, I guess, next biggest game of the week, would you say?
Chicago, LA, I would say.
Yeah. Ended up in a 1-1 draw. Omar Gonzalez got that late goal in stoppage time. I guess Colin John scored one of the goals of the week towards the end of regulation, and it looked like it was going to be enough for the 3 points, but ended up in a draw.
Yeah, I think at the beginning, both teams really wanted to win this match. I think LA really wanted to get off that slide, and when that red card to Cigars happened so early, you had to assume that this was LA's chance to really get a much-needed 3 points, and Chicago was in a lot of trouble, but They did well. They got organized in the back. They kept the chances down to a bare minimum, and even got a goal to make it interesting. And also a credit to Sean Johnson. I guess he's seen enough of Donovan footage on ESPN to know that if Donovan's in a little bit of a lull, he's gonna probably go to his more confident side when he's taking the penalty, that low right corner. And he read it perfectly. I think Donovan struck it as well as he strikes most of his penalties. And he made the save, and that was definitely a game changer right after that red card.
Yeah, and I mean, their recent forms had them, I guess they're out of the playoff right now.
The whole East besides the top two are out of the playoffs.
Right.
And they're all starting to really, really But they do.
I think
separate.
They do have like three or four games in hand.
They have two games.
Most of those teams in the West. I'm pretty sure Chicago has 19, if I'm not mistaken. But
I think it's 20. But yeah, they do have two games. Yeah, they have 20 games, and most teams have played 22 or 23. So yeah, they have games in hand. But I mean, have they shown signs that they're going to really pick up those points that those games have to offer? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, not really. I mean, as you said, a couple weeks ago, I think a lot of people were excited to see what they were going to do with a lot of their new personnel. But
I thought Nier Castillo looked probably the best he's looked so far. I mean, that's not saying much
right.
Because of his previous performances. But, yeah, they got a chance, but they got to start getting results.
Yeah, and as we said, a few of those teams in the West played 23 games, including Sounders, who they would have a shot to. So, you know, with three games in hand there, if they can get going, it'll be interesting to see if they can make the playoffs. I think most people will want to see that team in the playoffs. All right, let's see who go to next, I guess.
Probably Dallas-Toronto.
All right, Dallas-Toronto.
Yeah.
I guess that was, I mean, I don't have it pulled up. That was, what, a 1-0
Yeah,
1-0
Dallas.
Yeah.
Cunningham scored his 129th goal.
Yeah.
He's only three behind Jaime Moreno now. And, I mean, as a DC fan, I love Jaime, but you know 30% of those were all on penalties. And Jeff
right.
Cunningham's has been around the league. It's really taken his blows at some places. Really, you thought his career might have been over at that Toronto stint, but he's come back, played really well at Dallas, and he came off the bench. He's a little bit lesser role now, but he's still scoring goals.
Yep, so big 3 points for them. In Toronto, their playoff hopes look grimmer.
Yeah, I think it'll all hinge on next week. I think they have a pretty big matchup, if I recall correctly. We'll get to that later. But, yeah, and there was also a good moment for Dallas when that Ruben Luna guy came on. I think he's still like 18 years old. He's one of their guys from their academy. He looked the part, looked pretty good. I think he got a goal that was wrongly ruled offside. Looking back at the replays, he was onside. And, yeah, he looked pretty much the part. I mean, he wasn't on very long. When he probably made the wrong choice when Breck Shea was wide open on the right on a counterattack. But he looked strong and pretty technically gifted. And it's exciting times for Dallas and supporters of the academy system. Everything seems to be working for Dallas now, and I think their team, a lot of players will, or a lot of other teams will fear in the playoffs because they're good in the air, they're good on the ground, and they can score goals.
Yeah. On to Colorado and Chivas. Another good performance from Colorado, albeit against Chivas. They win 3-0, and Omar Cummings grabs a couple goals, including one really nice one.
Yeah, it showed. I think the announcer said something along the lines is that's what happens when you have that much speed. But I think he proved on that one goal that he has a little bit more than speed.
And he's a player. You know, I guess it's a shame that shame he's not American almost, because like I said, I think he fills that speed role or can fill that. And
yeah.
I just fancy him a lot more than say a Robbie Finley.
Yeah, I do too. And that Colorado attack when they can get going and Jamie Smith starts getting more involved and starts getting more in the middle of the field from that left side, they're a fearsome team that you don't fancy meeting them in the playoffs at all, especially if they get on that east. I mean, they could be Real Salt Lake of last year.
Yeah, and on the road, I mean, they, you know, as you're talking about with coming speed, I mean, they can kill you on the counter, and Lorenzo Witt's, you know, delivering those balls on the counter, who's having a pretty good year, all-star, I believe. San Jose and Houston.
Not the best game. I think Houston came in a situation with having to have a win, and they didn't perform too well. Giovanni, I think it was him and Stevenson,
yeah,
were the difference. I think Ari earned his money with that second
yeah.
half performance and that first goal when he had that incredible touch
yeah.
and raced down the field. And it looks like that Stevenson coming in late from that midfield looks like a pretty good signing too.
Yeah, I think Giovanni, he set up that first one, right?
Yeah, he set up the first one and
scored the winner.
And emphatic finish. Both of them coming off the counter. Yeah, and Houston just, they looked, I think, a little bit better in the second half after they got that goal right before halftime, Brad Davis' goal, losing his head. But they never, the story of their whole season is they have created the chances but have not been able to finish them.
Right. All right, on to New England and Seattle. Big blow for Seattle not being able to get a result. They lose 3-1 at Gillette. What do you take from that?
I think a lot of people are harping on those 10 minutes. I think Casey Keller says like the worst 10 minutes he's ever played, or the Seattle's ever played in the whole season.
Right.
But I didn't think they were that good in the entire game. I think they're passing. That's a long trip to be credit. Oh, to give them the benefit. That's a long trip. It's a different surface. Nobody really likes playing at the Revolution, but their passes weren't linking up. They looked slow. They looked tired. And I mean, if you're probably your most consistent player, and Osvaldo Alonso has such a terrible mistake as he did that led to that big, I think, the second goal.
Yeah.
It's not looking good. But they'll get back home. They'll get back on the West Coast where they thrive.
All right, so 3 points for New England team that's not really playing for a whole lot, but
they got to be down after losing that Super League. They obviously knew their squad was not deep enough to challenge for the MLS, really, so they banked it on the Super League, which they valued in the past, and a tough loss for them, and I think that's all she wrote for them.
All right, on to D.C. and Columbus, who I believe played twice last week.
Yeah, we lost in the Open Cup, D.C. lost in the Open Cup to Columbus. And probably a better game than this last weekend.
Both of those were at home, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
They've been in, I think Goff said, they've been in Washington longer than the politicians, those Columbus crew.
Yeah. All right, so no real surprises there. Columbus get 3 points.
No, and, I mean, if you saw that starting lineup for D.C. with Clyde Sims at center back, Gray, who's been struggling as a rookie at left back, moved to right back.
Right.
Mornsink and King in the midfield. It just you knew possession was going to be trouble. And
yeah, even as a fan and as optimistic as I want to be, I really didn't go into that match expecting a lot, even though it was at home. And I guess I got exactly what I expected, and not a too strong of a performance, not terrible, but not a performance that's going to win you many games.
All right, and the final game of the week, Union and Kansas City. Looked like the Union were going to get another 3 points, and Davey Arnaud scores again for the second straight week, and it was a nice goal.
Yeah, Chris Seitz, again, seems to be the weak link when you thought maybe this was his time to turn his career around, and he seems to have a few good spells of games, and then he has a big mistake that usually puts the Union in trouble.
Yeah, so I don't know. Are you really surprised with that result? Or
oh, no, not particularly. I think these teams are both kind of floundering. I don't see Kansas City really putting it together and getting to the playoffs. And, of course, the Union, who have had a pretty spirited debut season. I expect good things from them in the future. We're just a little short on quality and big on potential, but a little bit short on quality for this first year.
All right, and that'll wrap up this week's fixtures. Who do you have for your three stars, three brambles?
Okay, we'll go with the three up first. I'd say San Jose and their summer signings, Stephenson and Giovanni. They both look real good this last week. They linked up on both counterattacks. Stevenson is a big, strong, experienced midfielder, likes to make those deep runs a la Papa Diop from Fulham in his prime, and Giovanni is obviously a quality above a lot of MLS players, and they're great on the counter, and that's going to be big for him.
Yeah.
Number two will be Omar Cummings. I think this is about 4 weeks in a row. They might not have gotten the right result in those last 4 weeks, but he's been playing extremely well. He's always going to test teams and wind them up for Jamie Smith and Connor Casey, and he's starting to look real, real good at the right time.
And I guess number one star for this week, though I guess he didn't really have the best of games for his team, I would say Brian McBride. This is a name that almost every single American U.S. fan knows and loves. He's, as you may or may not have heard, he's retiring at the end of the season, and he almost epitomized what us U.S. fans like in a player. He works hard. He's big. He was always strong. He was fiercely loyal and always worked hard. And to be fair, he was a pretty dang good goal scorer, which is always gonna help in his reputation. And I think almost everywhere he's been, when he was at the Crew before he came back, he was a massive fan favorite. He was a fan favorite, of course, at Fulham, and it was a great moment for him to come back to his home area and play for Chicago. And I think it was also, this is kind of a big moment for MLS as itself, because he was, of course, the first ever pick in the first inaugural MLS draft, same draft that had Dennis Hamlett, who was the Chicago Fire coach last year. Of course, Jason Christ was also in that class, and now we're starting to see those players that started off in the MLS are winding down their careers. It's kind of neat to see like history be built right before our eyes. And hats off to Brian McBride, because he was, I think, an absolute legend for the U.S. national team. He scored big goals. He always gave 110%, and it'll be kind of a sad day to see him hang his boots up, I guess, and hopefully we'll get to see him in a coaching capacity role in the near future.
Fulham fans, I think, will be sad to see that as well, because who knows, if not for him for a couple of those seasons that were very dire, they might be playing in the Empower Championship or still be there, rather. So, but yeah. Sad to see him go. What about your duds?
Yeah, I think number three will be Seattle. I think I am predicting them to probably get a draw out of that match, but I would expect it something of a bigger challenge against Revolution. They didn't look good the whole match, and I didn't expect them maybe not to get 3 points. I would have liked a more spirited effort away from home. Number two, I will give it to the MLS in general for having this international break and still playing their games. They made the right move to move around the World Cup, but they still have not. They still are refusing to move their season around, and so many teams miss out from that. I think Toronto was missing 4 or 5 players, and it's almost unfair that these critical matches you're missing so many players, and you already have small squads as they are. That, I mean, injuries do enough that you don't need players missing because of the international break. And I guess number one will be MLS keepers. Usually this is a league that's pride is falling on these keepers that can play anywhere. And Hamid, Zach Thorin, Rohan Ricketts, and Chris Seitz all had nightmare plays. Zach Thorin got that ball kicked straight at to him, dropped it. Chris Seitz was way off his line on that free kick. Rohan Ricketts should have been covering that post a little bit closer. And, of course, my boy Bill Hamid with the dunce of the year, probably.
Yeah.
Poor guy. If nobody saw it, you have to check it out, unless you're a DC United fan.
Yeah.
Don't check it out. A typical ball played back by Clyde Sims. Pretty easy. He took a heavy, heavy first touch. I mean, the ball was bouncing a little bit, but he knocked it about 2 feet in front of him. And then tried to do this side karate kick he likes to do, and whiffed, and Scaletto just picked it and put it in the back of the net.
Alright, so I guess we'll take a look at next week's games and run through some quick predictions.
Yeah, okay. Let's run down. We actually have games Wednesday through Saturday. So.
Alright, what's the Wednesday? Is that...
The Wednesday is probably one of the bigger
Chicago
games.
Chicago?
Chicago-Toronto at Toledo Park at Chicago.
Alright, we have both of those teams. You'd have to
must
say,
win,
I
would say.
Yeah, I mean, loser to that.
Probably out.
Yeah.
And these are two teams that have been predicating themselves the last couple of weeks on draws or tight games. That they both need to go for the win. I fancy Chicago or Toronto, I would say, at Toyota.
Yeah, at home, I'll say 2-0 Fire.
Yeah, I'll say 1-0 to the Fire.
All right.
Okay, on Thursday, we're going to have another big game. It'll be Seattle at home against Real Salt Lake. Seattle really needs to... I think 3 points here, they would really solidify themselves in the playoff race. Confirm it. Yeah, but Real Salt Lake is no joke, especially on a nice field.
Yeah. For me, I guess that kind of sounds like a draw, so I'll go 1-1.
Yeah, I think it'll be a close game. Seattle is just a different beast at home, but I fear the inconsistency, so I will go 1-0 to Real Salt Lake.
All right.
Next up is two teams that are probably out of the playoffs. Chivas USA at the Home Depot against the Revolution. Probably not going to be the prettiest of games.
Yeah, nah. Of course, the Revs finally getting 3 points, first time in a while. You know, once again, that one kind of has draw written all over it. I'll say
a lot of these MLS games always do.
Yeah, they do. But that one in particular, I'll say 1-1.
Oh yeah, I don't see this game being too pretty, but I've been wrong before, so I'll go 0-0.
Okay.
Then Toronto play again on Saturday. They are at BMO Field against DC United. And I think this hinges a lot upon what they do
what happens
midweek.
Right.
But
yeah. It's hard to see DC going up there and getting a result. Yeah. So I'll say 1-0 Toronto.
Yeah, I'm thinking like 2-0 to Toronto. DC, they're looking better in some places. I think Tino is probably, his form has been completely overshadowed by how poor they've been as a team, but
right.
Yeah, that's not enough to win, especially at BMO Field. I'll go, 2-0 to Toronto. Next up will be the Red Hot Colorado coming to Red Bull Arena.
Yeah, it should be an interesting game.
New York liked the possession game a little bit. Colorado's just fine giving you that possession.
Absolutely.
It'll be an interesting matchup. I can't wait for Ream to battle against somebody that's maybe bigger than him and also try to battle against someone that's much faster than him.
I mean,
he's not the biggest physical specimen. He's not the quickest, but
right.
This will really test his game intelligence.
Okay. Very interesting game. I'll say 2-1 Red Bulls.
Yeah, I think Red Bulls will win this game. I'll go 2-1 as well to New York.
All right.
Next up will be Philadelphia hosting Chicago.
Union hosting the Fire. I mean, I guess based on the past few weeks, I mean, just wondering when the Fire might tune it up a little bit, and it just hadn't happened. But I don't know. Something tells me that this team gets it together at some point. I'll go 2-1 Fire.
Yeah, I think it's important for Conde to finally step up. He's, after being one of the most dominant defensive players in MLS for a couple of years, he's really kind of been not so hot this last year, and especially the last couple of games. But for some reason, I fancy Philadelphia to get a result here. I think Justin Mathis is starting to play really well. With two and Moinga meeting up or passing together as best they've had all year, and I think Philadelphia might win this one.
All right.
1-0. Last up, Dallas is going to San Jose in a real big match, I think, for San Jose.
Yeah, I mean, San Jose all of a sudden, I guess they're eighth right now. The playoffs started.
Yeah, they're eighth, but they also have a game in hand. And so they're tied on points with Seattle and still 5 points ahead of Toronto.
Yeah, be most interesting. I mean, I guess in the position they're in now, it's hard to see them really going for it. But I'll say 1-0 to the Quakes.
Yeah, it'll be another tough test for Dallas to travel all the way to San Jose. I think Dallas is playing well. I think they're playing while they're not putting up the big score like last weekend. I think they're probably in one of their better forms all season. And I think Dallas will probably take this one, 1-0.
All right.
Yeah, I'm not predicting a lot of goals this weekend. Last one will be, maybe, depending on the Real Salt Lake match, could be for the Community Shield League, with Los Angeles continuing to stumble. They're hosting Columbus at the Home Depot.
Yeah, interesting game. When the Galaxy sort of get it back together,
David Beckham is supposedly targeting this match to come back. I don't know if that means a start or that means off the bench, but this is his deadline,
right.
Self-imposed deadline to come back.
I'll say 2-2. I don't know. The Galaxy's form of late just hadn't been real convincing, and I don't know. I mean, I think Galaxy fans have to be a little bit concerned as playoffs get closer and closer here.
I think if they could get David Beckham healthy, that midfield has been struggling to create chances and leaving Buddle and Donovan on their own little island up front.
Yeah.
I think David Beckham would be a huge addition.
And, yeah, I mean, while the Alan Gordon, that transfer looked weird for Chivas, I think the Galaxy are starting to miss his supply a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. He holds them up all right, but I mean, that would probably allow Donovan to get back in the midfield and get Tristan Bowen where he belongs on the bench, but right now, that midfield is not producing anything, and I think David Beckham will go a long ways to getting them back on track. But I think Columbus, I always doubt them. They always seem to come through and get these grind-em-out results.
Right.
And I think they might get one again with, I would say, 1-1 at the Home Depot Center.
All right. So I guess that wraps up the predictions for next week. And what do we have? Yes, MLS attendances.
We can talk about that.
All right. Well, yeah, let's take a look at the MLS attendances for this year. We briefly mentioned it last week with talking about the Generation Adidas stuff and the new contract and the growth that the MLS has experienced over the last 5 years. But
which one?
So yeah, either one, I guess. Yeah, I mean, let's start off comparing or taking a look at the MLS versus the rest of the
And these are last weeks, by the way.
Right. So, versus the rest of the leagues in the world. And I guess the MLS were a little bit higher than I had expected. They are, 12th, it looks like, worldwide behind Bundesliga. It's number one in average attendance at 42,541. The English Premier League is second. La Liga in Spain's third. The Primera Division in Mexico is fourth. Serie A fifth. Argentine Primera Division is sixth. League One is seventh. Kind of surprisingly low there. Eight, the Eredivisie, just right behind France in attendance. The J League in Japan is ninth. The Football League Championship in England, or the UK rather, 10th. And 11th, we've got the Brazil Serie A and MLS right there at 12th. So I guess no real surprises there behind those leagues, but I guess the leagues that they're actually ahead of, including the Turkish League, Scottish Premier League, Russian Premier League, and then on to some other good second tier leagues in Europe.
Yeah, that you would expect.
Belgium, Portugal, Switzerland.
Since it's such an issue, expect that MLS would be far behind those. But I think we were talking about this off the podcast, that these numbers are kind of skewed a little bit by corporate sponsors and tickets given out to corporations.
Right.
But there's no hiding that it's gone up 7% from last year at this point. If that means you're giving out to more corporate sponsors, isn't that a good sign as well?
Yeah, I mean, no matter where they're coming from, more tickets sold, so obviously a positive.
Yeah, and this is also with DC, who's a well-known big fan base.
Plummeting. Right.
Their attendance is plummeting, but you got teams like Chicago Fire, which I was surprised, are actually going up significantly.
Yeah, and that is surprising. I don't know if maybe having a Mexican manager first year. They had Blanco for so long. You wouldn't think that would really create an increase there, and those new signings haven't been there long enough to make that significant of a difference.
No, I think it's 18% up.
Up
from last year. Yeah, that's eye opening. Wrote off Toyota Park as being a failure,
there.
And it looks like it might be turning around.
Right. So we'll start off, and of course, we'll take a look at the MLS, just individual attendance. No surprises, Sounders number one at average attendance of 36,154.
That beats a lot of Premier League teams.
Yeah, I mean that's phenomenal. And then down to Toronto, significant drop off there, 16,000 less on average than the Sounders, but just right at over 20. And
that's the number you kind of like to see. You want to see most MLS teams. That's their dream.
Right.
Attendance ranking is around that 20, 25. That's where all the all the new stands are being built around that same mile marker.
Yeah, you got a couple right in there. The Union, surprisingly, in their first year, just over 20,000 at third, followed by the Galaxy, who are right behind the Union. So you got those three clustered right there at 20,000. No surprises with Toronto's cultural, just the culture of the city that they've been such a success from an attendance standpoint. And then the Union, Philadelphia is just such a sports crazed city. You have to think that's the main reason. And once again, when you look at these parks and see these numbers, you have to wonder how many unused tickets there really are, or that were, you know, quote unquote sold. But and then once you get down to fifth, there's a nice cluster of teams in that 13, 14 to 17 range. Red Bulls, you know, maybe a little bit disappointing at seven, just over 17, up 40% from last year. But
well, I think that's also because why it says New York on there. On their brand and everything, they really are a New Jersey club, and I think there's a lot of untapped potential still in New York because, they don't view themselves as a New York club, but more a New Jersey club by most of the people.
Yeah, I mean, even though it's on the train stop up there outside the city, yeah, I mean, it's not that close to, you know, Manhattan or any of the boroughs in New York City.
That's why a lot of people are excited about this possible idea that the Cosmos will be coming back. Not only just the name brand that they are, but that huge untapped market. I think, while the Red Bulls have struggled to break into that New York press, I don't think the Cosmos would have near the decline that they did.
No. All right, and behind them, Houston Dynamo. You know, no surprises with their success.
And they're going to be getting a new stadium soon. They've been playing on that awful football line field at Houston. And it's terrible to watch. But I think if the date is 2012, they're moving into their new stadium.
Yeah.
And the renderings look pretty good, and that will always help.
All right, right behind them, Real Salt Lake, defending MLS champions, just under 17, which, you know, pretty good when you consider the market in Salt Lake City and consider the size of the stadium. I guess it's just about right capacity wise.
Yeah, it's pretty funny that their stadium and their name are both Spanish and maybe probably the least Spanish market possible.
Yeah.
In MLS and in Salt Lake City, the Rio Tinto. I think I saw someone said like when Henri went over to that game, he thought he was in Mexico because he went to the Rio and was playing a Real team. So
that's funny. All right, and yeah, we just mentioned Chicago Fire right there, over 15, up 18% from last year, and then DC United down 8%. Really, they're somewhat fortunate it hadn't been worse than that.
You have to also consider this is one of the most loyal fan bases in the MLS, and that just shows how sick and tired they're getting. I think that's a significant drop-off. I think it's now gotten to the point where they've lost faith in the front office, and that's why people aren't showing up. It's not the team playing poorly, but because there's been seasons when we played poorly, and attendance is still, while dropped, not significantly, and now I think DC fans are fed up with the whole situation that they're starting to call it quits.
All right, then we have Chivas. Right, just over 14. They are down 12% from last year. And, obviously, where do you point? I mean, for me, I guess, just the fact that, you know, they haven't done a whole lot from a personnel standpoint compared to the rest of the league, even another, you know, not that, of course, Chivas, LA is not a small market, but they're still almost have the perception of a small market team just based on what they have from a resource perspective.
Yeah, they did, a little risky maneuver by... I think it was a short-term goal by getting the Chivas brand on their jersey, but you have to realize that maybe you're supported by one club. Well, that club might not be loved by a lot of people. I liken it to, say, if an MLS club became Manchester United, LA, you're going to get all those big Manchester United fans, but you're also alienating a large base that you can possibly go after, and I think they did the right thing by going after the Latin market where LA has been more a diverse market they've gone after, but
yeah,
there's downsides.
Okay, past them, the Columbus Crew, really a shame they don't get more fans, just at under 14%, but that number is up close to 7% from last year.
I think it's probably the Columbus Crew girls.
Yeah. All right. Moving on, the Colorado Rapids, Dick's Sporting Good Park.
Bad field location.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this probably when you bring up Dallas, is that they just, in the growing MLS, when these teams, they marketed after that soccer mom crowd because that was the largest demographic, and Colorado and Dallas are both guilty of marketing towards that soccer mom and completely ignoring the growing fan base that is the U.S. soccer fan, but not, I wouldn't say hardcore, but the more sports savvy type crowd that, not to say soccer moms don't know what they're talking about, but there's a young, like young adult type crowd that's now going and supporting these teams, and they're not there just for a good night out or a good afternoon out, but they're there to support their team just like any other sport. And I don't think Colorado and Dallas ever factored that in, that movement and that grassroots movement of fans, and they banked on the soccer mom crowd, and I think they're paying for it now.
Yep. All right. Past that, New England Revolution at just under 12. They're down close to 17% from last year. I guess the biggest drop off of any team.
And Kraft doesn't look like he cares too much. They're still playing on that.
Yes, yeah, still
field.
Playing on Gillette.
And it's kind of disappointing. It's really disappointing because how good they were the last couple years before this last 2 years of downfall that they were. They were one of the best teams in MLS, but they just get no love from their ownership.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of injuries this season, and you know, not a whole lot of turnover in terms of bringing players in to excite the fans and keep them happy. So.
Steve Nichol has been scouting the world for cheap talent for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. All right, FC Dallas. At 11,000, just under 11,000, up 17%, and yeah, as we're talking about, I mean, to be fair,
when they announced 6,000
on a given day,
it looks like it's maybe 3,000.
Yeah, on a given day, I mean, when you're watching a game that's at Pizza Hut Park, I mean, literally, there are some games where they don't appear to be 2,000 people there.
Yeah,
I mean,
It's a decent stadium, but it's such in a bad location, and like Colorado, they market it, and where you would think in Dallas would be in Texas, you would think they would really focus on the Latin market, the Hispanic market, and they completely ignored it. And
it's
really disappointing and almost a joke. And this, they've rebranded I think twice now, and they can't still seem to get the idea that they're after the wrong market.
Yeah. All right, and on to the last two, Kansas City Wizards. Over 10,000, just over 10,000.
Moving into a new stadium.
Yeah, and much needed because there's a large contingent of U.S. soccer fans for sure in Kansas City. I believe, you know, when we were watching, I think they had like the largest like outdoor gathering or something in the U.S. for the World Cup games this summer. I want to say there were like, you know, close to 40,000 people like in their city center watching the game. So that new stadium, and maybe with, you know, a big designated player buyer or something this offseason could.
Omar Bravo is coming, which will be a big name.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to be able to attract a bigger caliber than that to Kansas City. But I mean, that's not to say that's not a pretty big caliber name.
Yeah. Should help, but all right, and then the last one, San Jose, 9.5. That's down 15% from last year.
I'm still questioning why they went back. You know, I don't.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. I mean, it doesn't appear anything's changed.
It's almost like the Browns when they demand they lose their team, they demand they get it back, and then they show back up. And
yeah, but at least the Browns, I mean, they have a passionate fan base and a lot of tradition. But tradition from the San. Yeah, I mean
they've been around for a while.
Yeah, I mean they right. So yeah, I don't know why they went back. I mean they didn't have success from a financial standpoint. You know when they were so good before they moved to Houston. But and down 15% from last year is hard to figure since they have put a better product on the field this year. So, but that rounds it out. And yeah, I mean, if your worst average attendance is around 10,000, you're not doing so bad, and that number should just continue to grow.
It's skewed because of culture we grew up in, that any college can get at least 40,000 in their stands.
Yeah.
For the American fan base. But around the world, I mean, if we really keep on trying to compare the MLS to other leagues around the world, we can't compare it to football. We can't compare it to the juggernaut that is baseball that can rack in 15,000 a night, let alone how soccer can only pull that in on one day a week. But yeah, you got to compare it to other places around the world and other soccer cultures, and we seem to be doing a lot better than we all thought.
All right, and I guess before we get out of here, we'll touch on one important change in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying that just came down. That ultimately it should be better as a whole for CONCACAF, but from a U.S.-Mexico rivalry perspective, there's no question it hurts that a great deal.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing. I think those are the matches we look forward to the most, bringing those Mexicans in the coldest weather we can find.
Right.
And playing. And I think our most memorable games from the last, every single qualifying is those big games. And
yeah, no question.
While we dread going to Azteca on a result basis, I think we relish the opportunity.
Yeah, relish the challenge to go down there and finally get a win.
And that'll be the biggest impact. I think this will do a lot for the smaller CONCACAF countries and them. Give them a bigger chance to qualify and give them a little bit softer route that will maybe raise their game and make it a little bit more competitive in the future. But yeah, it's disappointing when you're in the U.S. and you might miss out on Mexico.
Right, so I think what we'll see now in the final round of qualifying is opposed to the six teams all playing each other home and away. I think there are, two groups of four? And, you know, I don't know how that's going to affect... You know, maybe we'll have four teams. Is that possible that automatically qualify for 2014?
Yeah, I think that varies upon the...
It's just going to be interesting to see, I guess, since, you know, how they'll have that third place work out.
Yeah, they might have to do a playoff or something.
Right.
Like two playoffs in a row.
Yeah, two. Yeah.
Be kind of harsh on that
harsh
team.
Harsh for that one team, yeah, that didn't go through. But, so yeah, it hurts our rivalry. Probably, as you said, better for the smaller countries and, you know, probably gives us an easier route to the World Cup.
Well, yeah, it might make those trips to Costa Rica a little bit more dangerous because you only get six games to make it in. So that the U.S. is going to have to be more consistent against those teams that they might struggle with in the past away from home. Yeah, I think individual games will be more important, but you're not going to have that big rearing head of Mexico you have to face, and you're not going to have probably a Costa Rica or Trinidad or some decent team that can put it together on any given night.
All right. Well, that about does it for this week. And as I said, apologize for the shortened show, but, you know, nothing we can do about the international break. So we'll be back next week, back in full force to what we've been doing. And thanks for listening, and of course send us questions at worldsoccerweekly@gmail.com and check out totalfootballblog.wordpress.com, which, you know, we're trying to make the final switch, and, you know, hopefully that'll come sooner rather than later.
Yeah,
so.
Right now it's kind of on hiatus just because we're waiting for this big transition, which I think will be a big step up on
right.
the website scheme. And then we'll become a much more consistently updated thing.
Okay, thanks for listening, and until next time, have a great week.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and we also like to thank MLS Daily for giving us those attendance numbers. That's an invaluable service for us and all MLS fans to see those stats. So take care, everybody.